Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to my show. I am Dr. Jeanette Gallagher, and this is the place I like to bring topics I find that others are experiencing and may wish for a frank discussion of tips and solutions to improve and inspire their lives. We have a full range of topics that we discuss on this show, from health and death to dating and cookies. Almost everything is a go. I grew up asking why in all areas of my life, and it is something I still live by today. My guests and I talk about a topic in casual conversation so you, the listener, can feel like you are across the table from us with a coffee or tea. I welcome you, the listeners, and I hope to answer some of your questions as I speak with the guest of the day. If you would like to call into the show, I welcome you to dial 424-258-9318 and then push 1 so I can see your call in the queue and that you wish to speak to me. I would also encourage you to follow my show page and you will know what I will touch on next and when my next show will be. So now it's time to share with you and start the show today. Welcome. Each show, I begin to share products that I have found to improve the quality of life, and each month I will be talking about them briefly, sharing my own experience. So today I'm sharing about memory. What can we remember about names and places and what we had for lunch yesterday? I know for me, I don't care what I had yesterday. I'm more worried about what I'm going to have today. But it does play a part in that way. You do need to remember things. The company is Quincy Bioscience, and the product is called Prevagen Professional. You know, the reason I started taking it was I had several stressful life events in the past 10 years, and I have 4 children, and I noticed they started asking me questions like, aren't you remembering? I just told you that. What's the problem? You keep forgetting. And I didn't realize that. So I started taking 1 capsule of Prevagen Professional, 40 milligrams. They do also have a 10 milligram. You can ask the company about it. And I only take 1 capsule a day. And it really has been significantly helping. The product Prevagen Professional, it has a unique ingredient to help improve short-term memory and word recall. It does not interact with any other supplements or medications, and that's extremely important because no matter if you go to the doctor today and he changes your medications or you decide to try some other supplements, it does not interact with those. And also, Prevagen, the unique ingredient, is rarely, and I will challenge you to show us a product that unique ingredient is in. It's not combined with other supplements, and it is not a medication. It also has no common allergens, which is very important because I have a seafood allergy and I do not like to take soy or dairy. And if you start to read on the bottom of some of your supplements, on the back, on the bottom, it will say, this product has been produced in a plant that may be exposed to other allergens, meaning dairy, soy, corn, wheat, and all different allergens. So Prevagen is not. And research has shown it can reduce brain cell loss up to 50%. And, you know, I think that's a great margin. But I would also caution you here. Don't wait until 50% of your brain cells are gone thinking you're going to take this, and then you're going to get that 50% back again. Not going to happen. So if you're in your 40s and 50s, this definitely is a product you should be taking so you can prevent all of that excessive brain cell loss. I would encourage you to give them a call and ask them how Prevagen Professional may help you. Their telephone number is 888-895-6463. They have tons of clinical studies and reports of how Prevagen has helped others. You just need to ask them for help. So if you call this number, 888 895-6463 and you tell them that you heard about the product on this radio show and you have some questions, they'd be more than happy to direct you to someone who would be able to assist you and talk to you about your special needs. You know it's worked for me, and I just wanted to share this with you. So today, we are going to learn how to become your own advocate in your healthcare choices. My guest is Martine Ehrenklou. She has been in the healthcare industry as a patient advocate and has a master's in psychology. Martine has been a health writer, and while researching for her latest book, The Take Charge Patient, she had a health crisis of her own, which she had to learn to maneuver through. You know, there's no better teacher than going through something yourself and just being able to touch and feel all of the pitfalls and all the joys of any situation. So, Martine, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Dr. Gallier. It's a pleasure to be here.
Thank you so much for coming on today. You know, it's really interesting that we are talking about this today because so many people are concerned about what's going to happen to healthcare and how they can be responsible for themselves. You know, everybody wants to just say, I'm sick, I have this, and everybody's going to take me and rescue me. So how did you even get started in this?
I can so relate to what you just said about that people want to go to a physician or alternative medicine practitioner and say, rescue me, save me. It just doesn't work anymore. I think people really have to be involved in their health and take responsibility for themselves as patients. How I originally got into this was in 2001, my career path shifted. I've always been a professional writer, PR person, ghostwriter, that sort of thing. And in 2001, my mother went into the hospital for 5 months and died there. And shortly thereafter, my godmother, who I was very close to, went into the hospital for 7 months. And what I witnessed with both of their hospitalizations was a number of medical errors, and I experienced such overwhelm in the hospital and didn't know how to reach the doctors, and of course the nurses were really helpful and educated me quite a bit. But I wondered if other families felt or experienced what I did. And so I then interviewed 50 families, and their experiences were almost identical with the exception of the extended hospital stays. So then I went about researching what's going on in hospital patient care and then interviewed 175 physicians, nurses, hospital staff, and patients. And I wanted to provide information to people on how to be an advocate for a hospitalized loved one to prevent medical error, the spread of hospital-acquired infectious diseases, but also how to interact effectively with the medical providers there and how to communicate effectively with them to help maximize the patient's care. And then eventually I decided I had to write a book on how to advocate for yourself to get the best medical care outside of the hospital, and that was my newest book called The Take Charge Patient, How You Can Get the Best Medical Care.
Well, you know, I always find that you have to, as I said in the beginning, you really have to touch and feel all the good, bad, and ugly of a situation to be able to come out with an answer in almost any situation. I know with myself, I've been in the dental field, you know, as a dental hygienist, dental office manager, dental recruiter, you know, and then when I went into the medical, I was in open heart surgeries, I was, you know, a medical assistant. Then I went into provider relations for insurance companies, and I learned about how you credential doctors and what they really go through on that back end and why they do or don't want to take insurance, and then turned around and became a naturopathic medicine doctor. So then I learned, you know, what are people really looking for? What is the real scope? So when people come up and they say, you know, where have you come from? Where do you know things? I can take my experiences and then give them valid answers. And I think you having those experiences, you can also give those answers. Had you been in any other places in your life that may have directed you to know these answers?
I'd never been in a hospital before. Before 2001, with the exception of giving birth to my daughter. So, like a lot of people, I, you know, flew to another state and had no idea about how to navigate the hospital system at that point. So it's one thing, you know, just as you said, it's one thing
right.
to research and interview and get all the information, and it's another to live it. And with
yes.
my newest book, I mean, it was so ironic how it happened. I realized there was a need for a book on how to advocate for yourself from A to Z, really. And 6 months into those interviews, and basically the outline of the book was done, and I developed a severe chronic pain condition, and I ended up seeing 11 physicians of differing specialties and went through 15 procedures and tests, and I was prescribed 22 medications, and I received 10 misdiagnoses. So through that process, this is just so ironic, I still have a hard time coming to terms with it, but I ended up living each chapter of my book, and I ended up
right.
using all of my own strategies. And thankfully, I am pain-free now and found my own diagnosis and the surgeon to heal me. And it turned out that I had a muscle tear in my C-section with nerve involvement, and I had an inguinal hernia with a nerve passing through the hole. So there was nerve pain that I had been dealing with, and because I was seeing specialists, they were looking at their specialty. And since hernias in women are rare, you know, mm-hmm. nobody was considering that. So it was just lucky through my research that I came across a New York Times article about a woman just like me. And luckily, the surgeon who cured her was at a teaching hospital in Los Angeles, and she cured me as well. And I've been pain-free for about a year and a half, and I'm incredibly grateful.
You know, and I really think that people, so we'll set like a little disclaimer. I think that people always think that they're going to go way to the medical side. And, you know, you have to think about it as a ticker. You know, you look in front of you like this little needle that goes far to the left or far to the right, you know. So far to the right, they're going to go to the doctor and he's going to fix everything and he knows what he's doing. And then you take the alternative and you go all the way to the left and you say alternative medicine is going to fix me. But somewhere in the middle, you really have to take that responsibility, because neither one of those paradigms, alternative or traditional, still will be able to sit down. Information and knowledge and treatments and new diagnosis or new equipment is so rapidly being developed anymore.
Mm-hmm.
There is no one in the world that can tell you they know everything about everything. And if they
That's
do,
right.
they're lying. And, you know, that is something we can almost always agree on, is that that is the truth, because they just cannot keep up. So while we may have to go to several doctors to find something out, we may learn on the way the process of how to deal with that, but we may also learn what it isn't. And it may take a few different times.
Right.
You know, you're not going to walk into a doctor today and he's going to know what's wrong with you and you're going to be good to go. It's not going to happen, you know. And that is not the fault of the doctor, traditional
right.
or alternative,
right.
nor is it your fault. It's just the way life is.
And so many chronic pain patients end up living with chronic pain for so many years. So I think patients have to be involved in their care and participate. You know, it's not up to the physicians or alternative medicine practitioners to simply heal you. You have to meet those medical providers halfway and do your part.
You know, I think when you walk in, and this has happened to me a bazillion times, being a patient, being a mother, you know, or being in the healthcare industry side and as a provider, how many times have we ever spoken or given information and it was like, I'm going to tell them what I think they need to know? You know, if you've ever said that, and we know everybody says that, or the other question, well, they never asked me. Well, do you think maybe you should have said something? You know, I mean, I think those are the two things that you need to say, you know, and I think that's where, whose responsibility is that? You know, I'm a doctor. I'm not supposed to jump through the hoops and, you know, I'm not an intuitive and a psychic and I know everything you're thinking, you know?
You know, it's so important for patients to come prepared. You know, people often will go to the physician or other medical provider and not know the medications they're on or what they're taking them for. And it's so simple to create a list. And you can, if, even if you don't have, let's say you were just recently on antibiotics and you still have the same symptoms, even if you're throwing the pill bottle away, you can call up the pharmacy, asked to speak to
right.
the pharmacist. What was the name of that medication I was on? What was the milligram strength? And simply write it down. And if you can go see your medical provider, you know, with a health summary and your current list of medications, you know, their dosages, over-the-counter medications and allergies to medications, and copies of any pertinent medical records that you've had. Let's say you've had a CT scan or an MRI. It's important to be able to bring that information so that physician or medical provider isn't trying to lasso information from other specialists or the pharmacy. If you come prepared, you can maximize the time with that medical provider.
You know, so many times I can remember after Hurricane Katrina, people were evacuated. And I did hear it a little bit with this past Hurricane Sandy, but people would go and they would get help. Let's say if I'm evacuated from New Orleans and I end up in Texas, and you'd be at the shelter, and then the EMS people would be trying to help you, trying to support you, and they're like, okay, so how long have you had the cancer, or how long have you had diabetes, or how long have you had that heart murmur? And do you know that the patients don't even know they have that
yes.
problem?
Yes,
so
I
is
believe
that a pro-
that.
Right. Is that a problem of the doctor not telling you, or is it a problem of you're just sitting there, you know, texting on your telephone in the doctor's appointment while he's talking and waiting for the prescription? So really, where does that lay? You know, where does that absolute, you know, responsibility, but then we hate to use the word responsibility because we get that it is everyone's responsibility, but, you know, I tell everybody, hey, you came in this world yourself, you're going out, and it's really, all of us are just these bystanders you pass by, sort of like a road, you know, a little highway you go past mm-hmm. the exits, you know, and it's still you. I, you know, we can't save you, we can't totally fix everything, but it's your choice. So is it maybe a choice instead of a responsibility to live?
Well, maybe that's true. Maybe it is about choice. I think that, you know, so many of us, and especially the generation before us, were raised, mm-hmm. you know, with the relationship with the physician was with, you know, the patient was passive, as
right.
if the patient was a student, and the physician was, you know, I hate to use that term, you know, godlike, because it's just so overused, but let's say a teacher. And because the patient is passive, they're not as involved in their care and less apt to stick to the treatment plan that is prescribed. You know, the more a patient is involved, I mean, you know this,
mm-hmm.
the more they're more apt to, you know, take the medication or comply with the treatment plan. We were raised, or the generation before us were raised to believe that the doctors were up here and we were down there and all we
right.
had to do was sit and listen. Well, that's, it just doesn't work anymore. You know, it just doesn't work.
Well, you know, I think the internet was really what made the difference there, because before books were, I grew up in the 50s and 60s. Books were expensive. You know, not everybody had them. When you went to the library, it was limited what you could get there. Medical
mm-hmm.
books were not accessible to the regular
right.
people. You know, and now that the internet is there, you have it. And I can remember when I graduated, you say about being, you know, raised up because you were smarter or whatever. In dental hygiene school, we had white uniforms and we had the white cap, you know, white stockings and white shoes and everything. And it was like, I could not wait to ditch that stuff, you know.
I remember that so well.
Yeah. And then when I went to medical school, you know, we had to wear the scrubs with the white jacket. And you always had to have a stethoscope around your neck. It was like, who am I trying to impress? You know, what is the point here? I don't need my stethoscope hanging around my neck 24 hours a day. It's just ridiculous, you know? And so you think about that.
Did they tell you to wear the stethoscope for reason other than function, or?
I think that it seems to be the paradigm within. I mean, how many doctors do you go to? You always see it on them.
Right.
It is. You know, it really is. And it's sort of like, that's what you get into. It's sort of like, am I tying my shoes today? You just put it on. It's either
right.
on your neck or in your pocket. And why is that, you know? And we think about that all the time. You know, who's so higher and who isn't? Is it now because the patient can read for themselves? Are we saying that people are becoming educated and they shouldn't know the information? Why shouldn't they know the information? People can read. You know, they're not dumb. You know, they can get the information and they can say to you, I just saw this that came out yesterday. I'm sure, doctor, you didn't have a chance to read it in the new literature. Can I bring you a copy? And they're like, what? You know?
Right.
Really?
You know, I interviewed patients, you know, and I for the most part, just interviewed really proactive patients for my newest book. And many of them had copies of their medical records and list of medications and their whole health histories in their smartphones, which I thought at that point, if, you know, this was three years ago when I first started doing the research, and I thought that was, it's so easy, you know?
They had their own patient health record.
Yeah, put everything in there.
Yep. But, you know, even so, you can. It depends upon the area where you are. It depends upon what those people are willing to do because, you know, I live in an area, and I had gone out this past weekend and asked someone about a certain painting they had up, and he says, well, here you can have, you know, some paper on the thing. And I said, well, don't you just have an app, or can I just scan it and read it later? And it's like, they're like, I don't really know what that means, you know. Or I had one person say to me, well, you know, my patients or my clients, they don't even care about a cell phone. They just know how to talk on it. And it's like, okay, so, you know, where, how do you bridge that gap, too? I mean, your book has a ton of questions and answers, but you're going really, you're going the ticker again, you know, from not knowing to all the way knowing.
Well, there's the, you know, alternative of just writing things down. I mean, on my website, under all the free downloads, you can download a medical ID card, which I think is really important for everyone to have. And of course you can get a medical, you can get a medical app and put it all in your smartphone, but I have mine handwritten in my wallet next to my driver's license, because who knows when my cell phone's going to lose its juice and I need hard copies of everything. So if you're not,
or someone can't even use that that electronic to be able to find the
information. So you write it down on a piece of paper. I mean, if you're, God forbid, you have an accident, you're picked up by an ambulance, and the EMT is going to go first thing to your wallet and look for your driver's license, and right there you can have your medical ID card with emergency contact information, what medical conditions you have, the medications you're on, and any allergies to medication, so they can begin some form of treatment knowing what's going on with you. So handwriting it down, I mean, you don't even have to be internet savvy.
You know, so many people, they think they don't really need to have all that information because, you know, someone will always be with them, or you can call someone from my phone. And but in an emergency, you know, my daughter works in an emergency room. You've got seconds or minutes before that first line goes in. And once you put that first line in, that line's going with whatever they think that they are going to put in. And if you don't have any information that says you should not have that, you're kind of sunk, because once the first line goes, you know, you're putting in glucose, or you're putting in an antibiotic, or you're putting in some other medication that may be raising or lowering blood pressure or blood sugar, whatever. And if you already have instances with those, it's not like they take your blood pressure and they say, oh, they have high blood pressure. Well, they don't know if you took a drug or not in that first 30 seconds.
That's exactly
There's no way to know.
And back to what you had said about, patients will say, I'll have someone with me.
Mm-hmm.
Well, does your husband or your spouse or your sister or brother know all the medications that you're taking? You know, probably not. And people have asked me, you know, well, with EMR, that's going to solve all those, you know, medical errors. Well, not
Never.
So. Only 55% of physicians across the country are even getting up to speed with EMR, and there can be mistakes with EMR. I mean, similar mistakes, it's human error with input or misinterpretation, or something goes wrong with the electronic equipment. You need hard copy backups.
And even EMR is not even updated. Let's say I go in, have all my things in there, and then I might have an allergy today or a new drug today, and something happens tomorrow. It's not going to be in there.
That's right. That's exactly right.
You know, and to think that you're going to give your whole life over to somebody, you know, so then we go back to, what is your choice? Is your choice that you're just going to say, I'm going to sit down and let everything happen to you? So really, in a take charge patient, do you let everything happen to you, or are you going to at least open your mouth? So what percentage, I think your book addresses, you know, as the stages, what percentage are you going to be involved in? Are you going to, you know, just walk in and, oh, well, my bill, they'll figure it out, or, oh, well, my test, they know what they're doing. you know, I can tell you from my experience, I would go into one doctor and then he'd send me to another the following week. And they would want to repeat the same test that was done a week ago. And I'm like, are you kidding me?
Yeah.
You're not doing that. Not going to happen.
Right.
And they're like, well, we can't get it in a timely fashion. And the timely fashion is my answer. Okay, no problem. I'll go over there. I'll pick up the films and I'll bring them back. Is that timely enough?
Right.
You know?
Or when you get the film, I mean, when you have the test, you can ask for a copy right then.
Mm-hmm.
And you can take it home with you, put it in your health file, and if you ever need it, you have it there.
Yeah. And so how many people actually are able to do that, though?
Well, I think people need some guidance, and that's what my new book is about. It's about, you know, simple steps about what you can do, what are the basics to be prepared as a patient and to get involved. So it's, I mean, there. I don't know what percentage of patients are involved like we're talking about now, but I do think the change is coming, especially with patient-centered care where it revolves around the patient and family members being involved and interactive in the care.
And have you had experience with patient-centered care?
Oh, definitely. With my own medical condition, there were two physicians that I had collaborative relationships with, and one physician in particular, and I still see her now, she didn't find, you know, my problem, and that's okay. She's a great doctor. But she taught me by example exactly what a collaborative relationship was all about. It was based on mutual respect. She was the expert as the doctor, the training, the degrees. I respected her, and she respected me as a credible patient. I was a credible reporter of my symptoms. If she asked me to try something or do something and then report back into her, I did that. And then when I asked her, could endometriosis be one of the causes of my pain, she did a test to find out. And then she would find research, I would find research, and then we would have mutual discussion. Now, I didn't always understand all the medical terms. I would have to ask for clarification. But we would discuss. It was a partnership. I was the expert on me and my preferences and my symptoms and, you know, what my tolerance for risk is as far as treatments or surgeries or whatever. And she was the expert on diagnosis, prognosis, treatment plans. Do you know what I'm saying? So we both came together. That's,
you know,
what
I think that it really does take a ticker effect again, though, because you have experienced the greatest of it. And I have, in some instances, where I've had to really been very aggressive in getting, you know, what I needed done. But I also, and this happened last year, I went into a doctor's appointment, and a resident came in with just a sheet of paper in his hand, and he sat down, and he started asking me questions. And I said, you're asking me questions. Did you read the chart? And he said, no.
Oh.
He said, I'm only here to give you the report of the test. I says, well, then why are you asking me the questions? And I said, I'm not taking those results from you because I understand you didn't read the chart. So I would like to reschedule.
He didn't know what he was in for when he was dealing with you.
Right, but the point was, is how many people have that happen to them? Do you walk in blindly as a doctor, I mean as a patient, and not know what you're getting and just accept it? But also that doctor did the same thing. He turned around and did not know his patient. And how effective is that or not?
Right. Well,
yeah.
I actually did have one physician who treated me in a similar fashion and wanted nothing to do with my medical history, wasn't interested in what I had prepared.
Right.
I call it a patient's toolkit. And he just wanted to race into some treatment plan and then prescribe me a medication, not knowing what medications I was on. And we all have the choice, you know, if you are going to see a physician for the first time or you're seeing a physician now and you're not comfortable, that sort of gut feeling is giving you a signal that something is wrong, you don't have to go back. You have a choice. I didn't go back.
And I think that's important for people to know, is that you do have a choice. Whether you have insurance or you don't have insurance, or you have Medicaid or you have Medicare, you can still find somebody else.
Absolutely.
You will not be penalized. I mean, I've heard this from many people, the elderly, saying, oh, but, you know, I don't want to go back to that doctor, but what if I ended up breaking off with him? You know, what happens if I go to the hospital and I end up with him? And it's like, you've got to take a risk and you've got to just change for now and then handle those what ifs later.
Right, and do it while you're feeling well enough to do it, because mm-hmm. you don't want to get into a position where you're really needing a doctor and not feeling well, and you're stuck with a doctor that you're not comfortable with.
Right, what I always tell people, and this is the cardinal rule, if I drill this, if anybody takes anything from today, this is what you'll take. Once you go to a hospital and they give you a medication, you are then considered not a reliable source of information. That means they treat. You know, if they're giving you a pain medication and they're putting you into a certain position where you do not, they would not believe your answers would be reliable, they have to go about on their own business and they do their own treatment plan.
Right.
Unless you have an advocate with you.
Right. It's so important to ask a loved one to act as your advocate.
Yeah. So can you give us a few tips about, you know, we have about 20 minutes left of the show. If you could just tell us, you know, how you would walk through that, or, you know, what kind of challenges they may get, like we've said about challenges the past 20 minutes. So,
Well, a number of people ask me, how can I possibly ask the doctor to wash his or her hands, or how can I take, I'm afraid
right.
to ask questions because I don't want to take up, you know, his or her precious time. Well, this is your time too, and as long as you ask respectfully and politely and say, look, I just want to be involved in my care, I need to understand what the diagnosis is, what the treatment plan is, are there alternatives to the treatment, are there downsides to the treatment plan you're suggesting? The patient needs to understand. And if you're not in a position to understand, I mean, for example, it doesn't even have to be in the hospital, where I don't believe anybody
right.
can be their own advocate in the hospital. You must have a loved one there. Let's say you're going to see a physician. Everybody gets nervous going to see a medical provider. The office isn't a comfortable place for any of us. They aren't created for patients. And we have to put our wallet and ID aside, our phones aside, and we enter into a conversation with the medical provider, and maybe we have our own concerns, we're anxious, we're maybe scared about what's going on with us physically, and we might forget important points. So it's important to go to those medical appointments with a prepared list of questions. Now, that takes, 5 minutes maybe? What are your top 5 questions that you want to ask the physician?
Right.
Or what are your top 3 medical concerns? You can put it in your smartphone, you can write it on a piece of paper, put it in your wallet, put it in your pocket or your purse, and refer back to those. And also, bring a friend with you. I mean, many patients will go in, especially in the face of, you know, maybe a more serious diagnosis. It's very difficult to remember everything. Anxiety interferes with our cognitive function. So if we bring a friend in, they can take notes for us, and after the appointment, they can help us distill the information that the physician has told us.
You know, so many times I have spoken with patients and they would say, well, I'm going to go to the doctor, you know, and I'm sure he's probably just going to say, yes, I've got cancer, or I don't, but it's no big deal, because then, you know, that appointment won't really decide what we're going to do. So I can handle that appointment by myself. And it's like, are you really serious? Did you just hear what you just said?
Yeah.
You know, is that you're going to say, I can sit there in fully functioning form and listen to everything he's saying, and I'm good to go, and I'll deal next time. You know, so you really need to have people with you. And
absolutely.
You know, nobody wants to ask anyone to go with you, but all you could say is, hey, I don't need you to, you know everything. I need you to just write it down. You don't have
right.
to understand it.
And I'll do it for you if you have to go to the doctor. I mean, we can ask for help and offer it at the same time. And if you receive a serious diagnosis such as cancer, you're going to want to be doing, you know, research on, do I want to be seeing this particular physician? Do I want to be researching other physicians or, you know, other oncologists? I want to get a second opinion. I want to make sure that what the first proposed treatment plan is comfortable for me, feels right to me, it makes sense based on my research. You know, maybe I want to get into an online medical, you know, health community and check out with some other cancer patients if the treatments, you know, they've been through, you know, what they've been through, and then check out your treatment plan. Find out options, you know, online health communities are nice resources for patients.
And it's so hard when people say, I feel intimidated, I'm not going to go, you know, or I'm not going to go help the other person, when all they're really asking you to do is to be there. You need to put your hand out to them, you know, if there's somebody sitting next to you.
Exactly. It makes the patient feel much more confident. And I think one of the major problems with everybody, and myself included, when we go see a physician, we're insecure, we lack confidence, and we're probably anxious. And having someone there with you really helps in a number of ways.
You know,
if you're in
the
hospital, it's essential.
Well, can you tell us also, like, other things that people would incur? I know I've had issues with medical bills and medical insurance and everything else before, and I found that, you know, people say, I'll stay away from that emergency room and I'll just go to an urgent care, when really urgent cares are just the same as your physician. And, you know, there's such a varying degree in different areas.
Right.
But if you need to go to that emergency room, you need to go there. You know, I have found in my past, emergency rooms will work with you better if you need them on your bill versus in an urgent care. What have you found?
Well, it depends on the
severity.
The severity of the
right.
medical issue that you have.
Right.
I think if it's on a night or a weekend and
mm-hmm.
you have an ear infection, I don't think I would go to the emergency room simply because it's going to be really expensive and I'm going to be waiting a long time. And I'd rather go to an urgent care center where I know it's going to be staffed with a physician assistant or an NP and possibly a physician, and they can treat my ear infection. I mean, it all depends. If it's an emergency, yes, the ER is the appropriate place to go.
I've had people that would say they felt like they were having a heart attack and they're going to go to the urgent care because it's cheaper. You know, we have to really,
oh, yikes.
But yeah, you really need to pay attention, you know, to yourself. How really sick do you feel like you are? You know, sitting in an urgent care, having a heart attack is not the place to be.
Well, it's especially for women, it's easy to dismiss, you know, heart pain or, you know, pain that's going down your arm. I mean, we can all dismiss that, minimize it, say, oh, it's not, you know, a serious situation. But I think it's important to get to the emergency room if you have, you know, serious symptoms or possibly serious symptoms. You certainly want to rule it out and not take the chance.
It definitely does make a difference. Can you tell us a little bit of information about your book and where that book can be purchased and about your website? You have a ton of information on your website.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, my newest book is called The Take Charge Patient, How You Can Get the Best Medical Care, and it's available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, all online retailers, and in the bookstores. And you can also go to my website, which is www.thetakechargepatient.com, and find information there. But I also have a section for downloads. It's a top tab of the website. And there's all sorts of free patient safety checklists and sample questions to ask your doctor or questions to think about before you see a physician. And there's also the medical ID card on there that you can fill in yourself. There's lots of free information on there.
You know, in your book, you also talk about medical errors and medical, medical errors and mistreatments, maybe, I guess you could say. So when I found that medical errors, I know recently my mother just had, she's had a pain in her right hip for the last 10 years. You know, and she goes to the doctor last week and he took an x-ray of her left. And it was like, duh, you know. And she says,
oh my
and
goodness.
I looked up out there and he had that L all circled. Can't he read, you know, and it's, you know, you wonder, you know, are they actually listening or are they not listening? Because now myself, I went to the defense and I said, well, you know, I always take one of the left to compare it to the right. So he must have had two, a left and a right, right? She says, no, he only had a left, you know. So, I mean, patients need to notice that. She noticed that.
Well, it's a good thing she did notice it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, all sorts of medical errors like that occur. You know, I'm actually writing an article on surgery on the wrong body part, which in the U.S. occurs about 41 times a week. And, you know, pretty simple to prevent. And you know, the surgeons and the surgical staff should be going over a surgical safety checklist, but as you know, physicians and nurses are dealing with patient overload and focusing on just getting the next task done, and they're doing too much in too little time, and everyone is really trying to do, or most are just trying to do the best job they can, so patients and their family members have to be involved. I mean, I think that if a patient is going to have surgery, you do research on the hospital, but you also can ask your loved one who you've assigned to be your advocate to come down to the OR with you. I mean, they won't be allowed in the OR, but you can ask to speak to the medical staff, that's, you know, nurses or the anesthesiologist who are involved in your surgery, and go over your first name, date of birth, and mark with a permanent marker on the part of your body that it's to be operated on. And this prevents operation on the body part. It's the same with other medical errors. You know, medication errors are the most common medical errors, and 1.5 million medication errors harm patients every year. So if we're aware and we understand the names of our medications and the dosages, then we can check when we get the medication from the pharmacy and make sure it's what the doctor told us we are supposed to be taking. We can prevent those medical errors. I interviewed a pharmacist, and he told me about a very unfortunate but perfectly understandable medication error that happened. The prescription was filled, and the pharm tech handed the prescription to the patient's husband, who was picking it up for his wife. He brought it home, and the patient took two doses of it. And the next morning, that pharmacist got a really a phone call from a very upset patient, because that medication was meant for another patient. So it had another patient's name on it, and she took the medication. So, yes, the pharmacy is responsible, but how about the patient's husband looking at the bottle, making sure it's the correct name and the correct medication name, and also the patient?
You know, a lot of times everybody's looking to blame the other person. Yes, you can blame the other person, and like we said right from the very beginning of this call was, you know, you really have to be responsible yourself and make that choice for yourself, because if you just let it go, you're allowing things to happen to you. It's not like you're going to walk down the middle of the highway and say, I need to get from one exit to the other, and somebody's not going to hit you, you know? You know,
right.
The odds are just not there. And you know, we say about medical errors all the time. In hospitals, and even when you're having outpatient surgery or something, people can stay with you until that last moment when they say, okay, it's time to go. And right then, before that, is when they're checking about your band and about knowing who you are and everything, and right there is when you can make that mark. I mean, I even know myself, I've had surgeries, and just before that time, you know, they'd have you stand up and they'd mark whatever they needed to mark, and then you were ready to go.
Right.
You know, so people really do need to stand up and speak about that.
You know, I look at healthcare as a partnership between patients and their medical providers. And if we can work together, we can increase patient safety, increase the quality of care, you know, hopefully reduce cost, and everybody's, you know, happier with the quality of medical care that they're receiving if the patient is involved. Or if the patient can't be involved, getting a caregiver or a loved one to act as an advocate.
What have you found with, as we say, advocates and the end of life, and about the type of forms you might need and who would be able to direct your life then?
Well, it's really important to get your, you know, every state has different forms that mean different things. So it's important to check, you know, what you have to have depending on what state you're in. But you'll want to have, for example, maybe in some states it's called healthcare by proxy or end-of-life wishes. You can talk to your physician and say, I want to make sure that I have the kind of care I want at the end of my life, and what kinds of forms do I need to fill out? And, you know, there's online services that you can, legal services you can use, or you can find an attorney to help you fill out those forms, and you give those signed forms back to your primary care physician. It's very, very important. You don't want loved ones to have to be making decisions about the kind of care you're getting at end of life. I mean, it's very difficult for, you know, patients and physicians alike to discuss end of life issues. But I think if patients were aware of what could be happening to them later on in life that they may not want, they would get down to their attorney's office immediately. As after my mother died and I saw what happened to her, I knew I never wanted all of those life-saving treatments to happen to me. She suffered needlessly and miserably, as did my godmother. They both ended up on full life support and just suffered. I went down to my attorney's office and completed all of my legal papers and gave a copy to my primary care physician and a copy to my husband. I wanted to make sure that everybody knew what my wishes are.
And that is very important to have that. I do always direct my clients also. You can plug into Google. Just put five wishes for end-of-life care. Mm-hmm. And you will come up with a PDF that you can fill out. It's basic, and just carry it around in your purse. Because even if you don't get to an attorney or even if you don't have somebody else to help you, you've got that piece of paper. And you filled it out, and you've got it in your purse. I think you really need to have something.
That's a good idea.
It doesn't matter who it is or what it is. You know, the five wishes is simple to read. You know, you fill out two or three pieces of paper, and it's just basic.
I think it's a great idea. I'm not quite sure why people resist filling out information like that, but maybe, you know, we all don't really want to think about end of life, and maybe we think we're going to live forever, or that's not going to happen to me. But there's been, you know, there are some, I'm sure you know people, I'm sure your listeners know of people where, you know, treatment has been implemented at end of life that may not have served the patient's well-being.
Right, and just like we said before, once they start giving you medications and drugs, you will not be the person that will be able to be, quote, responsible for the answers. Even though you're the patient, and let's say they've already given you morphine or something, they're not going to come to you to ask you those answers.
Right.
They're going to turn to your family members. And, you know, it's happened to me. I've had family members it's happened to. They would give me the medication, and I'd be like, why did that doctor always talk to you instead of to me? You know, and the answer was, because you were on the medication, and we weren't.
Right.
You know, and how scary is that to know that you might have lost that control?
It is scary, which is all the more reason to choose someone who you really trust and who's very clear about your wishes to be your advocate and, you know, whatever they call it in your state, to be making decisions for you about your medical care towards the end of your life.
You know, I think people, towards the end, it's not that... Yes, many of them are afraid. But I also think that most don't understand the words. Like, what does that mean? You know, do you stop breathing? Or am I going to use life-saving techniques? What does that mean? You know, does that mean that I can still talk to you and everything and you're just going to put a heart monitor on me? And it's like, no. You know, so I think a lot of explanation needs to be had by that, by a lot of different people. So the sooner you have that discussion, it creates a lot of panic at the end, and you just don't need that panic.
Right, especially at a time, you know, where everybody is stressed who's involved.
Right, because their own fears come up. It's not always, you know, about, it's definitely about the situation, but if I'm someone who is afraid of a tube and, you know, and my mother's sitting there and she needs a tube put down her, I'm going to say, no, no, no. And it might be my fear coming through. It might not be my mother's who would like to live a little longer.
Right.
You know, about separating that out.
Right. There's a whole chapter in my book on all these legal documents, and it's pretty simple to understand. And there's lots of information out there. I really like the five wishes that you mentioned. Very simple, easy to understand.
And I think it's also important to note, too, is that it definitely is different state to state. If you move, You need to check what the laws are in your state. Or if I live in Florida and I'm going to go get treatment in New York, my papers may not carry over into that state.
That's right. You know, having a conversation with your physician could be very helpful.
I mean, how many times can you get stuck? You know, you just don't need to be stuck with that.
Right.
So, Martine, we're coming to the end of the hour. Is there anything more you'd like to share? We have about 8 more minutes that patients, you feel like what just came right into your face and you're like, you really need to get my book. Why would you get it?
Well, partly
I think it's a checklist myself.
Well, there are checklists at the end of each chapter.
Yes.
In my book, which people have said is very handy. I think those are important. I think the questions to think about before you see a physician or before you go into a hospital is important. And also knowing if you want to research, if you're comfortable researching, or finding someone who is comfortable researching, let's say you're going to go to the hospital, doing a little research, you know, on Hospital Compare or the Leapfrog group on what's going on in the hospital of your choice. Is that the hospital that you want to go to, or is this the physician I want to see? And also in my book, it talks about the relationship between the patient and the physician, which is really the cornerstone of healthcare. You're going to have much better chances of having good quality medical care if you choose a physician that you can relate to, that you trust, that you have confidence in, and who respects you, that you respect them. That relationship is so important. And also effective communication strategies. I think if you can communicate with your physician and you find that your physician is a good communicator, you're going to have much better chances of having quality medical care and a good outcome.
You know, we did skip over one thing about symptoms. You know, so many times patients would go in and they just tell, like we said, just tell a few things that are going on and not really get to the source of what they really should have disclosed to their other doctor. What have you found about symptoms and how important is that?
You know, that's such a good topic to bring up. I think for most people, just as you described, they go in and they're, you know, they haven't really thought about their symptoms before they walk into the doctor's office. So it's important to have a little journal. I call it in my book a medical journal, where you keep track of your symptoms, what makes them worse, what makes them better, what time of day they occur, is it at night that the pain or the discomfort gets worse, and keep track of it. You know, day by day, make little notes, keep track of things for yourself, and then when you go into the doctor's office, you at least have some idea of what's been going on, and you can share it with the physician, and you have more accurate information, rather than in the midst of the conversation with the physician, you're trying to remember, oh, okay, what was that? And I don't remember what the medication was I tried for that actually made it a little bit better, or those three things I did try that didn't work. You want to write all that stuff down. A little notebook, you keep it in your pocket or your purse. That's so helpful, and to think about it ahead of time. Takes a few minutes.
You know, the other thing I was just thinking about, too, is also this idea recently that pharmacies are starting to autofill. And,
oh, right.
Yeah, and what autofill means is they will, when you bring in a new prescription and it has refills, they're just going to sign you up and they'll call you to tell you to come to pick it up. And how many times do you not even know what you're picking up? You know, I know myself, I may prescribe something for someone in the beginning of, let's say, October, and they take it for 2 or 3 weeks and they say, you know, I really don't like this, it isn't working. And I might give them something else at the end of October. Well, at the beginning of November, on their, quote, autofill, they're now going to get the drug that wasn't working plus the drug that is working. And they may turn around and take both of those drugs.
Right. And also, you don't want to be charged. I mean, they're automatically charging your insurance company, and you're going to be paying copays on medications that maybe you're not taking anymore. So it's important to let your pharmacy, it happens with mail order pharmacies too, it's important to let them know, I do not want this auto refill.
And it's even more that if you're taking, like I know it happened with another client, that they were taking the blood pressure medication, like I said in the beginning, and then they got a second different one at the end of the month, and then they ended up taking both of the blood pressure medicines and didn't know, so their blood pressure, they ended up in the hospital. So, you know, you really need to have a conversation with your pharmacist, you know, hey, you need to take that other one off of my record. You know, because that one needs to not be coming up anymore.
That's a really good point. Physicians don't know. They don't know. And a few physicians told me about patients that had gotten a generic, let's say, use blood pressure medication for an example, who'd gotten blood pressure medication that was generic from them, and then the patient went to go see a specialist, and the specialist said, took the blood pressure, oh, your blood pressure's still too high, and then give samples, which, as you know, is brand. So the patient ends up on double the medication, not knowing.
Right.
So it's important to know the generic name, or at least have it written down somewhere, the generic name and the brand name, so you can keep track of it a little bit.
You know, when you walk out of the doctor's office, they're going to say, okay, well, stop taking that one and take this. Whose responsibility is that right there? That's the patient's, because nobody else is going to say stop. The doctor wrote it for, let's say, 10 refills. You'll see.
Right.
Still keep getting it, and the pharmacy doesn't know any better. Unless you, the person, says, opens your mouth and says the word stop, it won't happen, you know?
That's right. That's exactly
and that
right.
And that happens so much.
That it does. It's really important to be on top of your medications, but also to communicate to the physicians and the pharmacist. And your pharmacist is, if you can use one pharmacy and get to know your pharmacist a little bit, your pharmacist can check for interaction. So, and you can talk to that pharmacist if you have questions. You know, the specialist I just saw gave me these samples, and you know my other medications because they'll have your list in the computer. And ask the pharmacist questions. You can even make an appointment to see them and go over all your medications. And that pharmacist will spot problems. This pharmacist will say, oh, you're on the same medication, double the dose.
You know, and that's great to know, too, because it is good to go to a pharmacist that has a computer. I don't know how many times I could tell you I've seen pharmacists that do not have a computer. They are filling them by hand, and they're still doing things on paper, you know, so you really need to pay attention to what you are doing.
And come in with a list of your medications and give that to the pharmacist as well.
Right.
I mean, some people use more than one pharmacy, you know, simply for the sake of convenience. So if you're using more than one pharmacy, neither pharmacist or pharmacy is going to have a complete list of all your medications. So there's no way they can check for drug interactions.
Yep, so it really comes down to you really have to speak up. You know, no one is responsible ultimately for you but yourself. And, I mean, that is just the bottom line, and we just don't know how else to drill that home. And it's a really hard, you know, cookie to chew, but that is the reality of the whole story.
But there's such a benefit. I mean, it's not like, you know, both you and I are talking about patients having to do something that they're not necessarily geared up for or really into doing, and there's no payoff. There is a tremendous positive payoff for patients who get involved.
Right.
I mean, not just preventing medical error, but increasing the quality of the care. I mean, you just get better medical care if you're involved. So there is a big payoff. You know, it's initially a little bit more work, but after that it really becomes, you know, much less time, you know, involved. You have to invest much less time. And you become used to being more responsible for yourself as a patient.
Well, thank you so much for being my guest today.
Thank you for having me on.
My guest is Martine Ehrenclue. Her book is A Take Charge Patient. And I do have the link for Martine. It is on the description of this show. And there's also a link there where you'll be able to find out more information about the book. So you'll be able to also check through, and she does have a sample chapter on her website. You can kind of get an idea if this is something for you or not. She also does have tons of information on her website, and I would encourage you to check it out. It's a take. thetakechargepatient.com. And if you need any further information from me, this is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher, and my website is www.outoftheboxhealthcare.com. And I'd like to thank everyone for being with us today. And if you'd like anything else, please give me a call.